Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Julia Trustamere. How are you, Julia?
Hi, Chris. It's a long time since we last spoke. Good
I know,
to see
it's
you
been
again.
Years and years and years and years.
Yeah, it has been. I'm trying to remember how long ago it was, but anyway.
I remember trying to arrange to do an interview with you. Or would have been almost 9 months ago at the IWC
yes.
Awards.
Yeah.
And
it was as long ago as that, was it? Oh,
crikey. We must do this. It's taken us this long to hook up. So here we are. Here we are.
Here we are.
Okay, so just for the listeners who don't remember you from previous interviews, you what is your new... You've got a new role, haven't you?
Well, things have changed, you see, since we spoke last. And in actual fact, a lot happened in about 10 months since the last time we saw each other. So in fact, it's probably just as well that we delayed our chat until now because a lot's happened. So I was formerly Marketing Director of English Wine Producers, which many will know was the sort of outward-facing marketing organisation for the UK wine industry. And it was a group of, it was quite a small group of some of the leading larger wine producers who wanted to get together to promote themselves, but actually in so doing, promoting the industry. In the industry as well was another industry body called the UK Vineyards Association. Now, their job was really more central. It was more, central to the actual vineyards themselves. They were there to look after the interests of the growers and producers and to provide that appropriate support. So they were internal, we were external. As I'm sure we'll talk about and touch upon, a lot has been going on over the last few years and continuing to do so. And it just made absolute sense that the two combined forces and merged to become one strong industry organisation to look after both the interests of the growers and producers and to do that much needed, continued support through marketing and promotion of the industry itself. So Wines of Great Britain, we now are, and I'm heading up the marketing of Wines of Great Britain.
And also the Welsh came on board as well, didn't they?
They did. And that was great. In actual fact, the Welsh were always part of UK Vineyards Association. And they, a few years ago, formed their own association, the Welsh Vineyards Association, but very much part of UKVA. But it was really important that they came along with us as well. We're Wines of Great Britain, so that includes Welsh and English. Eventually, there'll be Scottish as well. So, who knows what'll happen in the future.
Do you know of any Scottish vineyards?
Yeah, there are. Yeah, there are some vineyards there. A little bit of wine's been produced. Not a lot, not in commercial quantities, but maybe a few years down the line.
Yeah, another 50 years. Maybe 40.
Depends how global warming carries on.
Okay. Wine GP, or Wines of Great Britain, is now a single marketing body and deals with all the regulations.
It is. So it is the trade association. So it's not just marketing. In fact, that's just one small part of it. We have so many things that we need to do. We know there's growth. We need to help manage and support that growth. And when I say support, it's actually making people outside of our industry aware of just what kind of an industry this is becoming, significantly, what it's doing to the rural economy. We'll talk about that, I'm sure, in a minute. The need to get some help from government to enable us to export, to promote ourselves properly, and also to look after our growers and producers. If this is an ever-growing agricultural product, or sector rather, in this country, well then we need the appropriate support and we need to tell people about it. So that's actually perhaps more of what we're doing than the actual hardline marketing. So and of course, as you knew, EWP, English Wine Producers, there were about 30 producers. Now we're looking after, over 400, nearly 500. So that's changed the marketing side of things a little bit. But I think, again, it's a reflection of the growth and the maturity, or the maturing industry that it is.
Okay, so where are we in terms of the growth? Let's get some numbers out there.
Okay. Absolutely. Something we've always been rather devoid of over the last, since ever. But no, this is exciting. We know we have been growing for nearly two decades now. We have nearly tripled our plantings. In fact, I think we now have tripled our plantings since 2000. We've doubled since 2010 alone. So we are now over 6,000 acres. Last year, we had our highest single sort of plantings, if you like, in any single year, and that was about 1 million vines, we calculated it to be. This year, we know around about 1.5 to 2 million vines are going in this year. It's going to carry on. There's going to be more. and more and more. So you can imagine, you can only imagine the kind of volume that's now that's going to result from that. We're starting to see it. We are seeing growth in our overall volumes. We still have the weather to contend with, of course, but actually we reckon that last year, 2017, we produced around 5.9 million bottles. Now, that for us was a growth. Given what 2017 was overall in the world, particularly in Northern Europe, actually it's not too bad to be able to be one of the few wine regions that's reporting growth. But obviously that's because of the sort of new plantings that are coming into production. Yeah. We did have vineyards that were pretty badly hit by late frost. I mean, of course they were. But not everybody. It wasn't completely widespread. As I say, you know, more vineyards were coming into production. So, yeah, it's onwards and upwards. Now, if we're looking predictions, this year, again, a new initiative that WineGB were doing, we have set our sights on producing a benchmark survey, which is something we obviously now need to do every year. But year one, 2018, we sent out a survey to all our members, and we have now been able to sort of glean some figures. So we know, kind of state of the nation, of course. So we know that last year we produced around about 5.9 million. We know that, you know, we've got just over 6,000 acres under vine. We know now that Pinot Noir plantings are the highest. Just pipped Chardonnay at the post. It was always Chardonnay. We know that about two-thirds of our plantings are now the traditional varieties, so Pinot Noir, Meunier and Chardonnay. Now, we've got a new CEO on board, which is terrific. And one of the things that he did as part of this exercise was to compare us to other wine regions like Oregon, California, Australia, and where they were when their industry was producing, you know, at that level that we currently are. And then mapped where they then went to over a 20-year or so period. So Oregon's quite an interesting quite an interesting example, because back in the early 90s, they were producing around about, they had the same sort of acreage that we have now and were producing similar quantities. And 20 years on, where are they? So if we were, as our industry, if we were to follow the same trajectory, I'm not saying that we definitely will, but if we were to, then in 20 years' time, so say 2040, our prediction is that we'll be producing around about 40 million bottles.
Yeah, okay.
Interesting. You know, it just gives us some sights. It gives us, you know, a little bit of
visibility,
and it just shows the kind of, you know, the rate of growth that we represent, and we can show that that's happened in other wine regions, and it just paints a picture of the future, which is important for us as we're talking, you know, having that very important dialogue with government. Mm-hmm. And let's face it, there's a lot going on at the moment. It'll help us.
I think there was a number I saw you guys quote a wee while ago about the size of the wine. Was it the size of the UK vineyards in the future? No. I've seen some numbers and I can't remember what they were.
The 40 million bottle predictions in 20 years' time. So we're sort of looking at 2040. You know, where could we be in 2040? What's the value of the industry? And you know, that those sort of things are just helping us sort of put a bit of an angle on things. So, you know, if we were to be producing 40 million bottles, we reckon that the retail value of that 40 million pound bottles will be around £1 billion. That's taking a retail price. Pretty significant when you think about it. You know, the other area that we're looking at, which is really important, is the kind of number of people that work in the wine industry in the UK. Now, of course, again, when you're taking it back to, you know, the agricultural sector, 1,000 acres of arable, I believe, you know, only needs about one person to sort of man it. Now, when you plant a vineyard, it's obviously more labour intensive, and you need to, you know, you need to employ quite a few more people. If we're again looking at the kind of rate of growth that we're looking at, and again comparing to one or two other wine regions, we employ round about just over 2,000 people at the moment in our wine industry. 2040, we could be employing about 24,000 people. Now, that again is pretty big hit on the on the economy. When I say a big hit, you know, it's what we're contributing back to the economy through employment. And of course, looking at the wine industry as a business beyond just production of wine, there are all the other business related developments as well, and tourism of course is absolutely key here. You're employing more people there, you're attracting people into these different regions around the UK. They're spending they're spending money, not just at the wineries and the cellar door, but actually in all sorts of other ancillary businesses, and not just related to the wine businesses, but, you know, hotels, garages, you know, delicatessens, pubs, whatever. There's a significant impact that this industry can potentially make. And so this is why we want to, you know, really start bending the ear of government and make them aware of just what this industry is starting to contribute to the economy.
Do you think you'll get much support from the government? Because as we wind into Brexit, one of the things I keep looking at is you go, okay, this vineyard here is set up over here, but, and you go, so how'd you go? And they go, well, we've got some funding from EU, and then, oh, down here we're developing some robotic things for our wine. Where'd you get your funding? Oh, from the EU. The current government's not known for spending money. If anything, they tend to cut money from spending budgets. So I think in the future we're going to get a reduction in the funding from government, because, you know, the EU spends money on agriculture and the government tends not to.
I'm sure, you know, we're learning on a daily basis, aren't we, what the government is planning to do post-Brexit. The industry, you know, whilst obviously there are going to be some challenges, actually I think the only way we can look at it is opportunities. Obviously one of the key things that we want to make sure the government secures is the appropriate trading and, developing, helping to support this industry in exporting. We are really lucky. We're part of an industry that is the it's the biggest export sector in Great Britain, which is food and drink. So actually, they do give support to that. As our volumes grow, so our exports are inevitably going to rise as well. I know that a number of particularly newer producers, but that doesn't discount the older producers as well, but people are much more focused on developing export sales as part of their overall marketing strategy, which I think is actually really, I think that's very refreshing. And it's absolutely necessary as well. You know, as more and more of the same style of wine comes into the UK market, I'm not going to say that we're going to flood it, because we're still a very small sector compared to the overall, you know, imported wine sector. But export is absolutely vital. And, you know, at the moment, for example, we are setting our sights on particularly the US. It's a good target market. That's where most of our producers who are starting to export and exporting are putting a lot of their efforts. It makes sense. We Why? Actually also happened, well, you know, common language. They get GB. They like our products. They appreciate the quality and the value. And, there's a good relationship between us and the States. And we also know it's a market that, for example, that Visit Britain are targeting as well. It's one of the ones that they're targeting. So, again, you can take the story about, coming back to visit the UK and wine tourism and everything with your message about export as well. So it's a good market to work in. The States is enormous. I mean, we're not going to flood the States with our product as well, but we know that we can actually enter into, you know, those sectors of the trade in the US and those cities which are going to be the most receptive. They're achieving some pretty good success and they're starting to, you know, exports are starting to rise. It only represents about 4% of our total volume output at the moment. But, we're definitely aiming to sort of produce, to export more.
Yeah, I suppose one of the advantages is with Brexit, we're never going to export a lot of wine to Europe.
No, it's never been a market that we export to, really.
Europe is never going to take us volume of
They
English
have their
wines.
Own wine anyway.
That's right. Saying. They've got their, well, America's got their own wine as well.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
But they don't have a lot of necessarily the cool climate stuff.
No, exactly.
Finger Lakes a little bit of
We have a great story. We have a great backstory and people like that. Actually, in Europe, one of the other successful export markets is Scandinavia. And that I can see will probably continue to grow as well. You know, in fact, I was with a group of journalists actually who came over from Sweden. There's a very innovative, enterprising lady who has set up wine tours into Sussex. She wants to develop into some of the other counties as well, but they can fly into Gatwick from Stockholm. They can do two or three wineries and then fly back out on the same day. It's perfectly possible to do. You could argue that it's actually probably easier to travel from Stockholm to South England than it is from other parts of England, really. But that's great. So she will be leading, she will be bringing people over, you know, to visit the winelands of Sussex and fly back to Scandinavia, and they'll know they can actually get some of those wines out there. So that's terrific. So we'll see some, you know, various developments going on there.
Okay. Okay, so Wines of Great Britain, seen the logo. I thought it was all right. You know,
good.
Some people said it was a little bit UKIP patriotic.
Yes.
But that's just like bad luck, you know. UKIP's a spent force, so I just offended all the listeners. why Wine GB?
We thought long and hard about it. We're in such an extraordinary position, aren't we? I don't really know of any other country that has so many different sort of versions of its own name, really. You know, we're England, Wales, UK, GB, you know, Britain.
Britannia.
You know, what are we? Where are we? Who are we? But, you know, Team GB, well, actually, I'll go one step back. Great Britain and British is so well recognised across the world. And it's got a very strong brand attached to it. It, you know, it screams the confidence and everything we stand for in, you know, here in Britain. The government, of course, have got their big campaign, the Great Campaign, based around Great Britain, of course. And let's not forget Team GB as well. That's a good, strong, powerful, very positive and defining name, really, for what we stand for and what we're really proud of. So it made huge sense to use the words Great Britain in the title of the new name and shorten it to Wine GB, which sort of makes sense as well. So it's just actually, it's working with what's already out there.
Yep.
You go to the States and people will talk about British wine. Actually, in fact, even over here, people will talk about British wine and they mean English wine and Welsh wine. They don't mean British wine. It's just a sort of very natural development, actually. And it works very much. It's aligned beautifully with, say, the Great Campaign. You know, food is great. Wine is great. English wine is great. Welsh wine is great.
Do you think you'll try and change what the definition of British wine is?
It's not going to be top of the list, but the British wine sector is a very big sector still.
Is it really?
Yeah, it is still busy. Yeah, there's a lot of volume produced, but
Britain, just for the listeners, British wine is wine made in Britain from imported grapes.
Imported grapes or unfermented grape mast, yes, absolutely. I think what we want to do, it's more actually not having a spat with the British wine producers and more actually being very defined with who we are, be it English wines, Welsh wines, Wines of Great Britain, and everything that we stand for, and all the products that we produce as well. You know, we've got some exciting different sort of sectors, haven't we? You know, we've got our fabulous traditional method sparkling wine, but we've got some amazing still wines now, and of course they're going to be a really important part of the tourism side of things. And actually, if I could talk a little bit about the tourism, because I think this again is you know, even last year if you and I had sat down and had that conversation, the developments that have taken place in less than a year are just really exciting.
Well, let's just park that there, Julia, and we'll pick up wine tourism next week.
Yeah, sure.